Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, as she is every single week with me, which I'm very glad, is the one and only Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Why, hello. How are things going for you?
It is very, very hot here.
That's it about is all not right here, now. You know, actually, by like midday, it was only like 66, so... Yeah, it's been kind of wonderful. Actually, our summer has been very mild, thank the Lord. And we've had enough rain. So, like, in the last couple of years, we've had lots of forest fires, sadly. So, this year, you know, knock on wood, that will not be the case. So, and the weather and the rain have definitely helped that out. So,
that's good.
But, we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about Harry Potter with Chapter 33, Fight and Flight. But before we do that, you know, as always, you can find the show wherever you get your podcasts, and just make sure you're subscribed there. You get the show as soon as it drops. And, you know, if you're on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please hit us up with a star rating and review. Help people find the show. We would really appreciate that. You can also find us on Twitter at JoinNerdParty or on Facebook at Facebook.com/NerdParty. And you can find us online at TheNerdParty.com, where you can also send us an email at TheNerdParty.com/contact. Choose a show. Choose Outpost, and that comes to Drea and I. So, Drea, I really enjoy this chapter because I like what you said last week where Hermione is lying through her teeth, and I love how the lying just continues about how she's like, Umbridge is all, did you hide it? Is it in Hagrid's hut? And she's like, of course not. He might accidentally set it off. And like, she is playing into Umbridge's hands perfectly. In this sense, like, Umbridge is just like putty in Hermione's fingers right now. It's amazing.
I was going to say, Umbridge is like a fiddle and she's playing her like a fiddle.
Yep.
It's kind of amazing. I was waiting for Harry to have kind of a reaction about the Hagrid comment, but I feel like at this point he's just too confused to understand what's going on. And I still love that at this point Harry is just really confused. And I think that's one of the things I kind of love most about Harry and his character. He is kind of always a little bit confused and he just kind of goes along with it. And I think it's good because it kind of mirrors the reader. Like, we don't really know what she's doing either. So I do love that. And I love that she's just kind of playing to Umbridge's ego very subtly and making her kind of let her guard down a little bit. And then they kind of just wander into the forest. And there's a nice little callback to the second book here.
Yeah, I really liked that. One, because they talk about how, you know, it's hidden in the forest because students aren't allowed to go into the forest. And she makes them go first. And Harry's like, do you want to give us your wand then if we're going first? And she's like, no, I think the ministry thinks I'm way more important than you are. So she's just being so awful. And so they're like walking through the forest. And as they're doing that, she keeps asking Hermione questions. And Hermione continues to answer the questions at the top of her lungs, which Harry's like, why are you being so loud? She's like, you'll see.
Why are you being so weird?
Yeah. Which, you know, it's like, Hermione, why are you don't suffer from voice of modulation? What's going on?
It's like, hey, Hermione, why are you talking so loud?
Harry, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's exactly what she's
it's
doing.
Exactly what's happening.
I'm sorry, Harry, I have voice of modulation. There's only one volume of my voice. But that's exactly what she's doing, and it's great because the reason she's doing it is that they are soon surrounded by 50 centaurs, and Umbridge does exactly what Hermione thinks she will do, which is she upsets the centaurs by calling them half-breeds, and basically unintelligent.
Near humans or human-like, something along those lines. But it's good that the Centaur stopped them when they did, because Harry knows from the second book, but Hermione doesn't realize she is walking straight towards Aragorn's lair, the spider, the giant spider from the second book, from Chamber of Secrets. So, you know, he's starting to get worried of how dangerous it actually is and where she's heading, and that she doesn't know that because, you know, Hermione wasn't with him and Ron for this portion. She was petrified at this point. So, you know, it's just, it's really fascinating that we get this little callback and this sort of like reference point in terms of geographically where we are. And then, yeah, we're surrounded by this giant herd of centaurs who basically try to haul Umbridge away. And then Hermione and Harry try to kind of sneak away based on the fact that they're kids again. But it doesn't really work this time for them because, you know, Hermione says something a little insensitive, kind of unknowingly, but the thing we were talking about earlier comes back to bite her in the butt from a few episodes ago or a few chapters ago. So that's kind of where we fall, and they have sort of an unlikely hero step in.
Yeah. See, this moment here, and it's so funny. It's like Hermione's been doing so great this whole time here. And then she says the worst thing she could possibly say, which is that we brought her here because we knew you'd take care of her. And it's true, but that's the exact wrong thing to say to the centaurs. And obviously, Harry knows this because he's interacted with the centaurs a few times. Hermione should remember this because of the conversation that she witnessed between Hagrid and the centaurs just a few chapters ago, but she does not. And it's not intentional in the sense she doesn't say it because she thinks they're near intelligent beings or anything like that. She's just literally saying, we knew you basically would help us, and not understanding the ramifications of centaur culture, and that's offensive to them, that humans would use them for a purpose.
Right. She went in knowing how they would react to Umbridge's racism, right? Essentially, or creatureism.
Speciesism or something.
Yeah. Or speciesism. I like that. Let's use that. And she just assumed that in this situation, the centaurs would be their allies, right? She had the best of intentions, and, you know, and she knew that they would be big and brave enough to stand up to Umbridge being a bully and a jerk and a speciesist. Oh, it doesn't work as well on that one, but we'll go with it. And in trying to explain the fact that she's trying to ally with them, she doesn't realize that that's just never going to work, that they're never going to ally. They're never going to want to ally with the humans, and they're never going to want to be seen doing their dirty work, right? She would have been better off continuing the lie and saying something like, oh, we got lost, or, you know, we were looking for something else, or, you know, she made us, you know, she would have been much better having prepared a lie, but she was trying to just be honest and be like, we just knew you would ally and you would help us. And they don't care about that. And so it was really interesting that, you know, she was so good up until there and then sort of lost it from there. But then, you know, through the trees comes crashing Gwarp. Gwarp. Gwarp, yeah, comes to save them.
So one last thing, I really appreciate that we have the centaurs kind of say one line that I thought was interesting. We are an ancient people who will not stand for wizard invasions and insults. And so you get this feeling as though there's a very long history between centaurs and humans that are wizards,
yeah,
that has not gone well. And this is why there is such animosity here. And so, yeah, it's just, it's a mess. But yes, then we get Gwarp come in and he's like looking for Hagger. Where's Hagger?
And I love that he's actually learning some English, because they were like, this is a lost cause. It'll never happen. And he's like, Gwarp, what Hagger? Like, he calls her Hermie, and I love it. I want to call her Hermie. Can I call her Hermie?
Yes. And he's real excited to see Hermie. And he's like, where's Hagrid? And she's like, I don't know. And he is not happy about that idea. And so it's like he's bending down to talk to them. the centaurs like release 50 arrows into his face. Like, ouch. It's awful.
It makes me sad. And the fact that he's actually kind of bleeding and getting attacked, and that, you know, Harry and Hermione take this as an opportunity to just go. But there's a part of you as the reader, and I'm sure there's a part of Harry when he stops to think about it, that's just like, I just left him. I just left Hagrid's brother out there to fight off all these centaurs all by himself. And, you know, at this point, they're sort of drenched in his blood. I mean, he's a big guy, but that's still quite a bit of blood to relatively cover two small humans. You know, it's kind of left at a question mark. We don't know what happens because they run out of the forest and immediately they run into Ron, Luna, Ginny, and Neville, and they're very confused.
Yeah, because they're all covered in blood. And I really love the moment where Hermione is trying to tell Harry, he's like, where are we going to go? How are we going to get to London? And we don't even have wands. Of course, we have to go back to the castle. And luckily, you know, we get the other kids show up and they tell them this great story about how, you know, they got a bunch of stunners in there and some disarming charms from and a nice impediment jinx from Neville. And then the cherry on top, apparently, is Ginny's bat bogey hex, which sounds disgusting that flying bat bogeys are tormenting the inquisitorial squad in Malfoy. Like, just hysterical. And so, and then they're trying to figure out how they're going to get to London, which Harry's like, you guys don't need to come. We just need to get there. And his scar starts hurting him enough so that he doesn't really want to argue. He just wants to get there. And the fact that Harry and Hermione smell like blood has drawn the Thestrals to them, and that is how they will be flying to get to London. And so, cool.
And I love the argument that the kids make about, you know, we joined Dumbledore's army, we joined the DA because this is something we wanted to do, and now this is our first real opportunity to do something, and you're telling us no, you know, and kind of challenges, well, was that all a joke? Was it just a game to you? Because, you know, we knew what we were signing up for, we knew what we were saying. And he doesn't have time to argue with them, but I also think their argument was pretty sound and it would be really difficult to argue with it. So I just really enjoyed that as well. And I love that they're going to fly to London and half of them can't even see what they're flying on. It's going to be amazing. Yeah,
that part's hysterical to me. And I really do enjoy that. And one of the things that I really enjoy too here is she's really legitimizing this reason of having this whole Dumbledore's army storyline. But not only that, but she's mirroring, you know, we know that Sirius and Lupin and James and Lily were all a part of Dumbledore's army the first time. And so we see, you know, and of course the Weasleys were a part of it as well. And so we see their children taking up that mantle, even when nobody's really asked them to at this point. In fact, they've been told not to, but they still take that on themselves. And, you know, I like that. And I love these kids saying to Harry, we're here for you. Let us help you. Let us be here for you. And it really is. It's a really kind of beautiful thing. Harry's just not used to having this many people be on his side, but now he has his own little posse, which is cool. You know, like we saw that memory of James with his posse, and now Harry truly has not just the Trinity, but he's got a posse.
Well, and I love the kids kind of taking up the gauntlet when no one asks them to. I love that they just know the right thing to do and they just want to do it out of the sake of it being the right thing to do, right? And I love that these kids kind of have a very clear understanding and acceptance of right and wrong, because it's so easy in these situations to not do anything because it's scary and no one has asked you or challenged you to do anything. And these kids are just so determined to do the right thing that it's just genuinely heartwarming that they want to do that and that they know the risk. For the most part, they know the risks. And I love that, you know, it's a whole group of people that are like-minded like Harry that makes him feel at home, makes him feel welcomed, and built his little posse, like you were saying, right? That it's amazing, and it's a good moment. And then they ride off on invisible horses,
which is great. Like you said, there's only two of them that can see the. So it's
can't Neville see them too?
Oh, right? Neville, excuse me. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Three.
So,
my
so about
bad.
Half.
Yes,
about half and half.
About half and half. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very short chapter, but a lot happens in it to get us to London, you know, where everything is about to go down. I mean, the Thestral crap is about to hit the fan. And so, is there poop? Would you think that's invisible too?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question.
I don't know. What? I feel like that would be a funny question to ask JK at a, a Q&A.
In a Q&A panel or something.
I just have a question for you. Is Thestral poop also invisible? So.
Would the excrement of them be also not visible to anyone who hasn't seen someone die?
Oh, man. Okay. So, anyway, that's where our chapter ends. We'll be back next week as we get to the Department of Mysteries. But Drea, where can people find you if they want to catch up with you on the old interwebs?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. I'm also here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars every week. We just kind of pick a fun topic in that universe and then talk about that, so I hope you'll enjoy it and check it out. You can find me on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is The Orb, Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show. Andrea was on the last week talking about Stranger Things, so everybody is going to want to check that out. And then last but not least, I'm doing Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney as we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.